So continuing in the Nectar Devotion from Chapter 10. So on these 64 items of devotional service, then Rupa Goswami mentioned the first 10. And these are regulations. These are the primary 10 regulative principles. Prabhupada's, this is from the 6th chapter. Then come the secondary 10 regulative principles. Added to these are 44 other activities. So altogether there are 64 items for discharging the regulative practice of devotional service. Out of these 64 items, 5 items, namely worshipping the deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating among the devotees in Samkirtan, and living in Mathura are very important. The 64 items of devotional service should include all of our activities of body, mind, and speech. As stated in the beginning, the regulative principle of devotional service enjoins that all of our senses must be employed in the service of the Lord. Exactly how they can be thus employed is described in this above 64 items. Now Srila Rupa Goswami will give evidence from different scriptures supporting the authenticity of many of these points. This is activity of body, mind, and words. We always hear this coming up constantly. So this is then in the Upadeshamrita is opening shloka. Vachovegam manasakrodamegam jihovegam utarapastavegam. So this is the body means the tongue, the belly, the genitals. Then the mind means the mind and anger. And speech means that power of speaking. So this covers the 6 different aspects of the urges of the body. So if those can be controlled and engaged in the Lord's service, then that is considered to be proper. That is what we want. That is what we're trying to obtain to. So all of the regulative principles are simply for controlling these 6 or engaging these 6. This is everything always will come back to this aspect, that we want to detach ourselves from the material nature and attach ourselves to Krishna. This is what we're trying to do. So then we can see this if these aspects are becoming detached from the material nature and they're becoming attached to Krishna. Like we give up like in eating. So then we become detached from eating all kinds of, you know, crazy things, and we become attached to taking prasad and, you know, speaking about Krishna. These different aspects, then they go. So then, we can always judge by this. So it's very important. Jai, Janani Vas Prabhu Ki Jai. I hear put the drum and kartals up there and give this to Mataji. Here, sit, Boshun. You can come and sit here and speak. So in Chapter 10, Techniques of Hearing and Remembering. So Srila Prabhupada is grouped these in these items in the various chapters to bring out their specialness. So this chapter 10, then we are dealing with this is the starting with number 23, item of the 44. Then this is the 23rd through the 26th. So in hearing, so this is the beginning of Krishna consciousness and devotional service is hearing, in Sanskrit called Shravanam. All people should be given the chance to come and join devotional parties so they may hear. This hearing is very important for progressing in Krishna consciousness. When one links his ears to give oral reception to transcendental vibrations, he can quickly become purified and cleansed in the heart. Lord Chaitanya has affirmed that this hearing is very important. It cleanses the heart of the contaminated soul so that he becomes quickly qualified to enter into devotional service and understand Krishna consciousness. So this is the Chaito Dharpa Namarjanam. So by hearing the chanting, hearing the philosophy, associating with devotees, receive these 5 main things, then three of them basically are dealing with hearing. That's the main aspect that will be there. Is that by associating with devotees, then we're discussing topics about Krishna and we're seeing how people act in Krishna consciousness. Then hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or directly hearing the glories of the Lord, and chanting Hare Krishna and performing Sankirtan, where we get others to take up chanting and that. Then this is all to do with the hearing. And then in remembering, then in deity worship, then that will be seen. We are coming before the deity, we're offering prayers, we're remembering the deity, we're meditating upon service to the deity and on the Lord. So then these techniques here then have been grouped in this chapter because of their very essential importance. In the Garuda Purana, the stress on hearing is expressed very nicely. It is said there, the state of conditioned life in the material world is just like that of a man lying unconscious, having been bitten by a snake. This is because both unconscious states can be ended by the sound of a mantra. So then when one is... when someone is bit by a snake, then they go unconscious. But they can be revived by someone who knows the proper mantras. They can be brought back to life by those mantras. So in the same way, when one has been bit by the snake of Maya, then one can be brought back to life or back to Krishna consciousness by hearing the holy name, by hearing the glories of the Lord. This actually awakens one. So this is the whole process starts by hearing. Anything that we want to do, even material activities, has to start by hearing. You hear about it. You learn the elements of it. Then after that, one is able to think and one is able to work within that field. But until one has heard something about it, one cannot function. So in the same way, the spiritual life starts by hearing. By hearing, we are awoken. Then by hearing, we are able to understand how to engage in devotional activities. And then the wonderful thing is in the spiritual world, that hearing continues. So even that is the absorption, that one is always absorbed in hearing and thinking about Krishna. This is a very nice aspect. In the material world, the basic elements then are given up at some point. Like when one learns things in the very beginning of, an activity, like you learn ABCs or things like that, then at some point that's given up. One doesn't worry about those things. One just deals with writing or some other element. But in Krishna consciousness, the things that we hear in the very beginning, then they continue. They don't stop, They don't stop at any point. Okay. Then in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 29th chapter, verse 40, the importance of hearing of the pastimes of the Lord is stated by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. My dear king, once you stay at a place where the great acharyas, holy teachers, speak about the transcendental activities of the Lord, and once you give oral reception to the nectarine river flowing from the moon-like faces of such great personalities. If someone eagerly continues to hear such transcendental sounds, then certainly he will become freed from all material hunger, thirst, fear, and lamentation, as well as all illusions of material existence. The difficulties of the material world... where is that coming? Oh, this will come up in the next. Okay. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended this process of hearing as a means of self-realization in the present age of Kali. In this age, it is very difficult to follow thoroughly the regulated principles and studies of the Vedas, which were formerly recommended. However, if one gives oral reception to the sound vibrated by great devotees and acharyas, that alone will give him relief from all material contamination. Therefore, it is the recommendation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that one should simply hear from authorities who are actually devotees of the Lord. Hearing from professional men will not help. If we hear from those who are actually self-realized, then the nectarine rivers, like those which are flowing on the moon planet, will flow into our ears. This is the metaphor used in the above verse. So in previous ages, people were very qualified. They could follow principles very easily. They could follow the various rules and regulations very easily. They could very easily become established in some variety of sadhana or practice that would elevate them and would help them attain perfection. But unfortunately, in this age, these things are very, very difficult. It means we have regulations, but it's not that the regulation itself so much as what is giving us the perfection, but it is simply assisting or helping in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And our ability to perform those activities is coming because we are chanting. So this is the interesting thing, is by chanting, we're able to follow the regulative principles. And then by those regulative principles, they help refine and bring out our understandings of the process of devotional service. So actually, the holy name is the main thing. By hearing the holy name, by hearing about the glories of the Lord, then one is inspired to go on. Before, there was the determination that you could follow something. You knew that this was good. You did it. Like we see Dhruva Maharaj. He hadn't heard much. He just heard that you want your desire fulfilled. You go to God. He can fulfill all desires. And then God, where does God... Okay, so where do I meet God? Okay, he stays in the forest. You know, so how do you... You know, and we understand that because the sages, they go to the forest when they want to find God. So he must be there. And with that only, he goes to the forest. So then, because of this determination that, okay, I have this thing I want to ask from God, so I want to see God. He's not thinking I can't see God or anything. He just knows he's in the forest. I will find him there. And because of this determination, then that gives all such good qualities that he again comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. He gives him a process. In 6 months, he perfects it. So they had such determination in these things before, but now that's not so strong. So by hearing means there we even see he still started by hearing. He heard from his mother, then after he heard from Narad Muni, and then they could perfect. So the hearing still remains very essential, but we see a lot depended upon his performance of the activities. But still now, I mean, in this age, then the hearing becomes more actually important, because we have to constantly hear, then we give up our attachments to the material world, and we become attracted to the spiritual world. See, both aspects are very important. Many times we hear so much discussion on becoming detached from the material world. That's very important, because if one doesn't advance. It's very hard to advance. Prabhupada always gives the example of the boat that you don't pull out the anchor, you can row all night, it won't go anywhere. So that must be there. But at the same time, we must also understand we must be attracted to Krishna. Otherwise, we'll be detached from the material world. And if we're only detached from the material world and not attracted to Krishna, then we will come to the neutral platform, right? The Brahma-Bhuta platform, which is a platform of liberation. And then what do we do there? Because the platform of liberation, we cannot stay at. You cannot stay there very long. You either have to go up or down. So the recommended process is we understand both these aspects, we attraction to Krishna, and giving up the attraction for Maya. So by hearing, then we hear about both these things. We hear how wonderful Krishna is, how nice he is, how nice his service is, how others have attained perfection by following this. And we hear about the difficulties in the material world, how what we are looking for in the material world isn't found here. We've heard about it, many talk about it. I mean, even that's how we're inspired by the material world, who we've heard, right? You hear on the television, you hear in the radio, you hear in the movies, you see in the magazines and newspapers, and you have others, friends and relatives and acquaintances talk about it, that there's something here. So therefore we work very hard to get it. But then the Vedic literatures, then they show us by speaking, by telling us that it's not here. We don't find much here. It's not. Because what we're looking for something that is real, that we have the interest to taste you know, some happiness, to taste interaction with people, to taste some platform of lasting happiness. That's real. That's the nature of the soul. But unfortunately, it's not here, right? We've been tricked that we are wanting to enjoy, but it's not here. It's in the spiritual realm, right? But that trick comes from our own self, because we ourselves have decided that we wanted to be the enjoyers of the spiritual realm. So therefore, our attention was turned to the material world, right? Since enjoying the spiritual nature, as the enjoyer, then is an illusion. So therefore, we're given illusion to try to enjoy, right? We are in illusion to want to enjoy the spiritual nature, so we are given the illusion of the material nature to enjoy, right? So we're given what we want. But so by hearing from the scriptures, we understand that that's not the actual way to become happy. We have to become happy through hearing about the transcendental realm and activities in the transcendental. So then continuing. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, a materialistic person can give up his material hankerings only by becoming situated in Krishna consciousness. Unless one finds a superior engagement, he will not be able to give up his inferior engagement. In the material world, everyone is engaged in the illusory activities of the inferior energy. But when one is given the opportunity to relish the activities of the superior energy performed by Krishna, then he forgets all his lesser pleasures. When Krishna speaks on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, to the materialistic person, it appears that this is simply talk between two friends. But actually, it is a river of nectar flowing down from the mouth of Sri Krishna. Arjuna gave oral reception to such vibrations, and thus he became freed from all the illusions of material problems. So by tasting a higher taste, we give up the lower. So we always must remember that the whole process of Krishna consciousness is giving up our attachments to the lower, and while we simultaneously cultivate the taste of higher tastes, means cultivating higher tastes, that makes it very easy to give up the lower. But we also have to know that the lower is to be given up. Otherwise, we may taste the higher, we give up the lower, but then when the higher is somehow or another not there due to lack of association or not good sadhana, we'll again go back to the lower. You know, because we're looking for taste, right? This is nice, and then that's nice. Sometimes we find that devotee, or sometimes the children, or that, very spontaneously attracted to this, attracted to that. And then we can't figure out, why is it sometimes they're attracted to all crazy things, other times they're attracted to Krishna and all nice things? It's because they're just attracted to taste. So the whole idea is they also have to have the knowledge to know which of the two, which is superior, which is inferior. So with time, one sees that there's the superiority of the one over the other. But it also helps very much that there is the knowledge that the lower one doesn't give actually the satisfaction. It may give some taste today, but tomorrow it won't. While the higher engagement, it'll give taste today, it will also give taste tomorrow. This always is continuing. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd chapter, verse 15, it is stated, a person who desires unalloyed devotional service to Lord Krishna, who is praised by transcendental sound vibrations, should always hear about his glorification and transcendental qualities. This will surely kill all kinds of inauspiciousness in the heart. So by hearing about Krishna, that also destroys these lower interests and lower tastes that we may have. We have heard about these others, so we want them. Either we've heard in this life, we've heard in previous life, so then the desire comes up. So then by hearing about these higher principles of Krishna, these lower tastes can be destroyed. Because factually they can only be destroyed by Krishna. Sometimes we would think that by our strength of our own sadhana we're going to remove these things. No, it's by Krishna's grace that these are removed. We ourselves are not actually able to remove them. The strict sadhana means that we have the determination, serious determination, the desire to give up those particular bad habits and desires. And because of that, then Krishna is pleased. He blesses us. So it's still Krishna that removes. So the essential element is to have that desire to want those to be given up. Then that will manifest generally in some very nice, steady devotional service. But even if it's not, as we will see in this next verse, then still that desiring Krishna's mercy, then that is the important thing. So the next point is expecting the Lord's mercy. In the 10th canto, 14th verse, verse 8, it is said, "My dear Lord, any person who is constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him, and who goes on suffering the resultant actions of his past misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is surely eligible to become liberated, for it has become his rightful claim." The statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. A devotee should not expect immediate relief from the reactions of his past misdeeds. No conditioned soul is free from such reactionary experiences, because material existence means continued suffering or enjoying of past activities. If one has finished his material activities, then there is no more birth. This is possible only when one begins Krishna conscious activities, because such activities do not produce reaction. Therefore, as soon as one becomes perfect in Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious activities, he is not going to take birth again in this material world. A devotee who is not perfectly freed from the resultant actions should therefore continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously, even though there may be so many impediments. When such impediments arise, he should simply think of Krishna and expect his mercy. That is the only solace. If the devotee passes his days in that spirit, it is certain that he is going to be promoted to the abode of the Lord. By such activities, he earns his claim to enter into the kingdom of God. The exact word used in this verse is dayabhak. Dayabhak refers to a son's becoming the lawful inheritor of the property of the father. In a similar way, a pure devotee who is prepared to undergo all kinds of tribulations in executing Krishna conscious duties becomes lawfully qualified to enter into the transcendental abode. This is a very, very essential point, that we expect the Lord's mercy, because we know that we have performed so many, you know, activities, pious and impious, in this lifetime and past lifetimes. So the reactions of those are going to continue to come. They're not going to not come. Prabhupada gives the example of you turn off a fan, the fan keeps spinning. So what's the turning off of the fan means, by performing devotional activities, there's no reaction to that. You perform an activity for Krishna, it doesn't give a pious or impious result. In the Gita, then it's mentioned that you have time and the modes of nature that creates karma. Time is movement or activity, and the modes of nature. So activity under the modes of nature create karma. So if we have time, which we're still working within time, but we're not working with the modes, means we ourselves are doing it for Krishna. The modes may be carrying out the activity, but that's not the problem, because the modes aren't, they don't suffer the or enjoy the reactions of the activities, right? Means Durga Devi doesn't have any problems performing her duties. She doesn't suffer because of what we do. So the modes of material nature may carry out the activity, but we are not connected with it, because we don't desire a result. Therefore, activity is there, time is there, but in our consciousness, the modes are not there. So if there's no modes, then there's no karma. So there's no good and bad reaction. So the fan is turned off. So that means then all that's happening is, from previous times we've done so many things, those reactions keep coming. It's not that they're going to go away just in a puff of smoke. Because the difficulty is when they, if they do go away in a puff of smoke, then we find the tendency is to forget Krishna. Right? Because then things are very nice and pleasant and no problems. So we forget Krishna, right? As evidenced by Indra, very nice devotee, right? He's only there because he is a devotee. But he always forgets. He always gets carried away in all his pleasures and position and facility and power and all these different things. So he always forgets. Even to the point of insulting his own guru, killing Brahmins. He does all these. He just doesn't think. Right? He just doesn't act properly. So therefore, he runs into trouble. Therefore, that's why the fan just keeps going. Because we ourselves are performing devotional activities, but we may still have so much attachment for the material nature. Right? In the beginning, when someone is artarthi, then he is interested that the pains of the material world go away. That's why he approaches God. He's not approaching God that, I just want to go back to Godhead, serve you, be your pure devotee, please you. That's not the prayer. The prayer is, this world is so difficult, and one turns to God for a solution to the difficulty. So all one wants is the difficulties go away, and then one can be happy, one can enjoy it. Right? Or the artha, he just wants his poor condition to go away, and then he has money, he has facility. Like that, that's what he's asking. So then he'll enjoy. He's because he's suffering, he's going to God. When he's enjoying, he was not going to God. When he's suffering, he's going to God. The jnani, he wants knowledge. Excuse me, not the jnani, the jigyasu, he wants knowledge. When he gets that knowledge, then he may go away. Like that. That is because that's what he's approached God for. He's gotten it, now he goes. So unless one comes to a higher platform, where you see Dhruva Maharaj, when he saw the Lord, he understood this is a higher platform. Then he said, what I was looking for was just like broken glass, but now you've given me the most precious gem. Right? And the broken glass he was looking for was a kingdom greater than his grandfather's. You know, or than his father's. His father was king of the universe. In those days, it wasn't broken up into smaller parts. It was quite early in the whole creation. So then, he was king of the universe. So there wasn't a whole lot more than that, right? You know, it's like, it's not a... So he wanted more than that. So that means he desired more than any materialist wants. Even Hiranyakashipu just wanted to be the lord of this universe. He didn't want more than that. Dhruva Maharaj's desire was greater than that. Right? So that means you cannot all, whatever unlimited material desires you can think of, all fit into this one. Right? And he said this was broken pieces of glass. So that finishes off basically material desire. When there's not something else. It wasn't okay, but I have this desire. You know, I want to do something else. You know, do some skydiving or something. No, it all fits within this one. This is the, you know. So the difficulty comes is because we have these desires. The tendency is that we will forget Krishna. So then these difficulties still come because these were what we wanted. Like that. I don't know if we discussed that here. Well, I think we discussed in Hungary. See, when you perform an activity, see, we'll always say, I want something, but you get both sides of it. Just like, I want a big feast means I also want, you know, a very heavy stomach afterwards, you know, or possibly a stomach ache or maybe a bad stomach or like that. They go together. The tendency is we kind of like finesse the one, the downside, and don't talk about it much because it'll ruin our, you know. I mean, if during the whole meal someone's going, you know, if you keep eating more of that, you're going to get a stomach ache, you know. I mean, you sure you want more of this? I mean, it's really nice, but I mean, you know, then you'll get too full and then afterwards you'll be rolling on the ground. You couldn't enjoy the meal. So you forget about those things. But they come after. They do come. So like that, when you want an activity, the other side comes with it. So therefore, sometimes it's devotees will, or anybody will think that this concept of predestiny, it's like I'm getting, you know, I mean, you get caught up in it and there's no free will or anything. No, it's totally free will. That's the thing, it's absolutely free will. That's all that's going on. But for an activity, you will get the good and the bad to it. So when we're getting the good, no one's complaining about free will. Right? When anybody's having a good time, I've never heard anyone bring up the question when they're having a good time. It's only when bad things are happening, then they're wondering why I'm forced into these bad activities. But what we forget is that bad activity, or the bad reaction, is just the other side, the other half of the good reaction that we've already had. Right? They go together. Like that. Sometimes depending upon the reaction, because God is the one who sets the standards, sometimes the reaction is greater than the pleasure one gets out of it. Just like one kills a cow, you know, one may enjoy for a very short period of time, and then for every hair on the cow's body, one will have to take birth and be killed. So the downside is a little bit bigger than the upside on this, you know. And then on some things it's, you know, a little bit more balanced. Because these then are going against these. In other words, those things which will very much impede or completely stop devotional advancement, those things, the reactions are much stronger. And those things that are not so strong on that, the reactions aren't so strong. Because the whole purpose of human life is to advance, is to develop on Krishna's path, to go forward on Krishna's path. So then, those things that will help that, they're called pious. Those things that are against that are called impious. So then the reactions may come. In impious activity, the result is not so great. What you get that's good is not so great. It is quite short-lived. And the bad result is much greater. And when you perform the pious activities, generally the result is bigger and the downside is a little smaller. Like that. Like you go to the heavenly planets for 10,000 years and then the next birth after that is a blade of grass on this planet. So the blade of grass, you know, one doesn't last too long in that birth. And that, the piety on the heavenly planets is greater. But in any case, they go together. Saying, I want to go to the heavenly planets means I want to take birth as a blade of grass. They go together. Saying, I want to go to the Brahman means I want to take my next birth either as a tree or a stone. Right? They go together. One can't have one without the other. So then in our free will, just those times when we're getting the very distressing side, we're just getting the downside of the reaction of whatever it was that we did that we've either already enjoyed in the past or something, either this life or previous lifetime. So they come together. Like you order a meal at a restaurant, then you get what you ordered, plus you get the bill. You know? Like that. It's not that you can get, you know, it's like if at that point you go, you know, hey, what happened to the free will? I don't want to pay this bill. You know, I don't want to do this. Where's my free will? No, your free will has both of them, you know, they both come together. So that is the point. And so then, while these reactions are coming, now one can either think to serve Krishna during this. It mentions if one serves Krishna even during these impediments, then automatically the rightful claim of going back to Godhead becomes the devotees. Because no matter what's happening to them, they go on serving Krishna and expecting Krishna's mercy. So this is expecting, this is not demanding. That's very important. It's expecting that we know that only Krishna can take care. No one else can help us. Right? It means Krishna, the devotional process, the devotees, the whole transcendental process, that is what is going to help. So we turn to Krishna, that only He can remove these desires that have created these difficulties. Only He can remove the impediments that keep us from advancing in devotional service. So then one in this way expects the mercy of the Lord, because otherwise we expect by my own cleverness I'm going to overcome this problem. No, it's by the Lord's mercy we will overcome this problem. And He may give us the intelligence, or through other devotees, or through whatever. The Lord will take care however He wants. But the point is if we are thinking of the Lord, then, as it mentions in this previous verse from Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit, someone eagerly continues to hear such transcendental sounds, then certainly he will become freed from all material hunger, thirst, fear, and lamentation, as well as all illusions of material existence. So hunger, thirst, fear, lamentation, these are all they don't disturb someone who is not attached to the material energy. Right? Because the hunger and thirst, they're affecting the body. Right? The subtle body is not affected by these things. The soul is not affected. The body is. Now, depending upon this, then this hunger and thirst, depending upon our desires and our concept, it may be more or less. Like we see somebody, they just get a little hungry immediately, it's the end of the world. Other persons, they can, you know, fast all day. There's no problem. It's not that they're not hungry. It just doesn't disturb them so much because they have a higher principle. They know, okay, today's a fast day, so I'm fasting. You know? So then, even though they're hungry, it doesn't disturb them at all. They're not bothered by it in the least because of this higher understanding. So then, hunger, thirst, fear, then we give up that fear of our attachment to the material body, that we think I am this body, and because of that, therefore we're fearful of losing the body or losing some facility of the body or some position or something connected with the body or some or even aspects of the subtle body, relationships, emotional platforms, our intelligence, our ego. We're afraid of losing those things because we're afraid of that I'm servant of Krishna. You know? That we're actually, that's the principle. I'm servant of Krishna. These other things aren't really important. Like that, I'm servant of Krishna. From that, I then, that adjusts our ego, how we use our intelligence, the mind, the senses. All this becomes adjusted by that. So that if we agree to that, then that fear goes away. And lamentation, we only are lamenting for things we have lost. Or, you know, opportunities lost, you know, like this. This is what we're lamenting for. You know, or, you know, unfortunate situations gained, you know, one or the others. So this is then the expecting the Lord's mercy. Then, okay, so this is, yeah, these two points are kind of like very connected. Any questions on any of these? Before we go on to remembrance and meditation. Yes.
So if you didn't have the material desires, would we use it in Krishna's service?
Yes. If we, means we have material desires, we use them in Krishna's service, but at the same time, we understand that it's, we try to take the desires through a progression. In the beginning, it's we have the desire, we just do it. So that's not at all recommended. That's just material. The next stage, which is actually devotional, is we have the desire, so then we engage that desire in Krishna's service, but we want that desire. Then the next stage is we start to see that desire, because all, basically, at least all pious desires, fairly much, or let's say pious meaning that are in line with devotional service. Pious that are going to take us to karma, jnana, and yoga, those are left. The piety that will take us forward on the devotional path, it's not against devotional principles. Then that piety, then we see that Krishna actually wants us to engage in these ways or that. It means not necessarily us in particular, but that is the process, right? There is a process. Just like in Krishna's system, a social system, you have the grihastha ashram. In grihastha ashram, one has children. So then there can be one wants children. There's no question of Krishna involved at all. One just has children. So then the next step is one wants children, but then one tries to make the children Krishna conscious, so then one tries to follow the rules and regulations for Krishna conscious children. Then the next stage is the Grihastha Ashram and is part of Krishna's whole plan, the social plan. So then we see, well, what is it that Krishna, how is it that this whole process works? What is the purpose in all this? So then we see Krishna and Krishna's desire, Krishna's standards and everything first, then we adjust ourselves according to that. Right? So, in other words, the whole idea is to please Krishna. So we look, okay, raise a Krishna conscious child. So that means we need to be Krishna conscious, we need to, be able to save them from death. So that means we have to give them Krishna consciousness. Just having the children, not saving them from death, is not exactly, then that comes down to one of those first two. Either we just had the children because we're into them, or we want them to become devotees, but, you know, if they don't, then, you know, at least if they get a PhD from Harvard and land themselves a six-figure salary, then, you know, at least we set them up. You know, we did our best. We did our duty, right? So then, but the other is that we see that. So Krishna has no problem with Grihastha Ashram, has no problem with children, just he recommends that you see that you are going to save them from death by giving a Krishna consciousness. Then that means that we're coming into that level of engaging material desires. So that is the recommended platform of engaging. That's called naishkarmya, or where one is performing activities but without the desiring the results for oneself. It's for Krishna. Like that. One has the nature, one has the facility. Like Gopal Bhatta Goswami mentions that a brahmachari who finishes his education and finds that he comes across facility, you know, either from the family or this or that, people give, whatever. And he has the facility then for Grihastha Ashram, and he has the inclination towards it, then he should get married, because everything's there, like that. So then he can do. But he's doing because these are the duties, like that. And then in this way, those desires that are there, they also get taken care of. It's just like, if we cook nice preparations for Krishna, offer it to Krishna, then our own desires for nice things is also taken care of. So that's a higher level. The lower level is, I want to eat something nice, I therefore cook something nice for Krishna. Both cases, our own desires are going to be taken care of. But we see that there is a higher level of satisfaction and advancement because we're trying to please Krishna more directly with the cooking for him. So because he is more pleased, naturally we're more pleased, we advance more. But in both cases we will advance because it is devotional service. That's the point. Even the lowest level of devotional service is still devotional service, and we will advance. So we start from there, but we should understand the total process. And that ultimately then, the point is just to please Krishna. So then we see, what does Krishna want? You know? Like that. So then you see. Then it works. So the consciousness is actually the important element. Arjuna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita wanted to fight. It was part of the Lord's plan. But he wasn't conscious of it. So he wanted to fight because he wanted to fight and he wanted to get the results. Then when he saw the results weren't going to be good, he didn't want to fight. Right? So all up to that point, he was a Kshatriya, wanted to do the Kshatriya activities. But when he saw it wasn't going to work, then he thought, why bother? Then I'll become a Brahmin. So then Krishna speaks to him to do the Kshatriya duties. But now, he's doing the Kshatriya duties because that's his duty to Krishna. He has that nature. He will engage that nature in Krishna's service. So the whole point is that to please Krishna, he's doing it. Rather than to please himself, he's doing it for Krishna. Right? That's the difference. To please Krishna, I do the duties that are in line with my conditioned nature. Or, to please myself, I do my conditioned duties, but I do it for Krishna because I know that's the actual proper thing. You understand the difference? Like that. So that's important. So the point is it doesn't matter where we start, but we have to understand that progression. And we have to understand ultimately it's just whatever Krishna wants. it'll just go how he wants. And then it'll be nice. Like the Pandavas, you know, if it was up, it means Yudhishthira wasn't overly worried this way and that way, but if it was up to Bhima and Arjuna and Draupadi, then they never would have been in the forest. Duryodhana himself would have been killed, you know, a long time ago. And everything else would have remained just as it was. But that wouldn't have pleased the Lord. Right? So therefore we see Yudhishthira is the main player. Because he is just going with the Lord's plan. Whatever happens. Therefore they're ending up in the forest. They're ending up all these things. Even though Bhima is saying, I'll kill him now. You know, just let me go back and I'll kill him right now. Why should we play around with all this? You know, it's against Dharma what they've done. So, you know, and we're Kshatriyas are supposed to establish Dharma. So why are we playing around? And Yudhishthira, no. This is the way it's gone. So because by this, then Krishna is able to remove a very large amount of demons. Otherwise, he would have only removed one, Duryodhana. But by leaving it for 14 years, then you remove, you know, 640 million demons. Like that. So it was much more, Krishna's plan was much more effective. So during that, they didn't really suffer. Because they always had Krishna, and so many wonderful things happened. Like that. I mean, when we think of the Pandavas, we think more of the 14 years in exile and the Kurukshetra war than we do of all the other time, right? The war lasted 18 days. You were in the forest for 14 years. Krishna was on the planet for 125 years. And Arjuna and Krishna were cousins, so they were about the same age. So basically the other 110 years, you don't even talk about much. You know, it's only talked about to bring it up to the point of they were exiled and there was a war. That's all. So the difficulties that they experienced, that's what we remember. That's what we discuss. That's what they're glorified for. And then Kunti Devi, when it was all over, then she was feeling sorry that now that everything's very nice and wonderful and they're emperors of the world and that, now Krishna's going away. Krishna's going away. I mean, Draupadi, of all the things that she's remembered for, she's remembered the most for when they tried to disrobe her in the assembly. Like that. So that's a very unnerving experience, you know. Of all the things, that's the most unnerving. Even more than losing her children, even all these things. That would be the most disturbing. Like that. So she's remembered the most for that, you know. Arjuna is remembered the most for his performance in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. You know? Yudhishthira is remembered most for his dharma. You know, and generally it was at times that were difficult. Following dharma at the gambling match, following the dharma at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, following dharma when all his brothers are dead next to this lake, and he wants to drink water, and the person says, no, you don't answer my questions, you don't drink this water, or otherwise you'll die like everybody else. So his whole, you know, then he, because he's fixed in dharma, okay, it's your lake, you have to be satisfied, then I can drink the water. The other brothers were, you know, I drink the water, then we talk. You know, it's like, so they're remembered, and these are all times of difficulty, you know. Pritikit Maharaj means we remember him for the time in the womb of his mother when he was attacked by the Brahmastra, and we remember him for the 7 days when he was cursed, in the 7 days where he was fasting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in these moments, in the absorption in the Lord, the intensity of thinking of the Lord is the greatest. So that's the whole point, is if one is hearing about the Lord performing service, then all this hunger, thirst, fear, lamentation, they go away. Generally we'll think that if I'm performing religious activities, all impediments will go away. But the real impediment is thinking of Krishna, remembering Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna. That goes away. But the material, they are going away. But it's like Prabhupada says, like the fan, it's slowing down. So in the beginning, it's much more strong. It slowly, slowly goes. You know, slowly, slowly goes. I mean, if one thinks about it, many devotees will feel that now there is more difficulties and problems and all that than there was before. But if one looks back, it's just devotees who become more sensitive. They become more pious. So a pious person, then they're disturbed by material things, disturb, finer material things disturb more. I mean, it's like, how you say? How the common devotee lives in India now, you know, back when Prabhupada was here, there was no question of that. You know, even Prabhupada didn't have facilities that some devotees have now. Right? Isn't it? You know? Hey, you got offices, everything's air-conditioned, everything's this, that, all facilities. You know, I mean, we see Prabhupada's room. You go to houses around here or different people's room. Prabhupada's room is very simple. You know? Like that. And, you know, what they cook for Radha Madhava, like that. Like that, that's what Prabhupada ate. And many devotees will think that's very simple. Before it was like you get the Mahaprasad, that was like the topmost. Nowadays, you know, who cares for Mahaprasad? They're going off cooking something else, cooking what they like. So they're just becoming more sensitive. So then these little things bother them more. I mean, 1970, Prabhupada was here. There was four devotees in New Vrindavan were saying that Prabhupada was God. Right? They were saying Prabhupada is God. And Prabhupada's gone away because we didn't understand he was God. He's gone off to India. He's never coming back. He's rejected all of you. Right? We don't have anything of that stature now. I mean, full-on, straight, pure Mayavad philosophy. That your relationship with Prabhupada and your spiritual master is absolutely removed. And you've been rejected. There's no question of establishing anything else. There's no alternatives. You look at that. That's not going on today. Not even in the worst scenarios is that going on. That was in 1970. You know? Yeah. And, yeah, so these things, so many things are going on. But devotees at that time, you know, because they're not, how you say, they just freshly come to Krishna consciousness, big things don't seem so big, you know? Now, because the smaller things, then they bother, you know? Like, you know, you have the story of the princess and the pea, right? She can't sleep. She's on 15 mattresses, super soft mattresses, because there's one little pea underneath. She can't sleep. Just because one becomes more refined, like that. And then we see with that, then come the development of the pious desires. Before there was impious desires. And in general, you see much of that has gone away. But now pious desires, material desires have come in. You know, just nice facility, nice family, nice position, everything just nice, nice, everything like that. And then, so that's a distraction. But even that has to be given up. So the point is pious and impious have to be given up. They're just reading. So when it's in the seventh canto, Bhagavatam, where it says that one must elevate oneself to the platform of goodness, and then one must give up one's attachment to the mode of goodness. Because in the modes of passion, ignorance is very difficult to advance. Though one can, means the devotional process is so powerful even in that. But one is being brought to the mode of goodness, but one has to go beyond goodness. Otherwise, in goodness, one will get attached to the material world. One of the qualities of goodness is desire for happiness. And that's material happiness. This is material goodness. So the desires of like the demigods and that to enjoy and do all the crazy things they do is coming from the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness still has passion and ignorance in it, something. So even that must be given up at some point. So the idea that the impediments will go away is generally the attraction to piety, right? Because then one is happy with that. Like when things are going nice, everyone's happy with that, because that side of it. When the reactions are there, then one's not. So one may be willing to give up sinful activities, but one has to be willing to give up the attachment to pious activities that give material result. Does that make sense? Yes, of course. That's there. Therefore, the process is giving up the attachment. It's not necessarily giving up the activity. Is that one brings oneself from the sinful position of doing it for yourself to doing what you want to do for God. Right? Then one comes to the platform of doing for God what he likes according to the rules and regulations. So whatever God likes within the realm of Vaidhi Bhakti is pious. But it's the pious activities, the original pious activities, that are devotional service. So we cut off all those pious activities that are more connected just with our own mundane ideas. Right? Does that make some sense? Is that itself is a very big topic. You know, like that. It means pious activities come out of devotion. Devotional service is the original. As it becomes reflected in the world, then you have pious and impious activities. So in the straight reflection, proper reflection, then you have the pious activities that will bring one back to the original transcendental position. Right? But then, for those who want to stay in the material world, you have pious activities that you will stay in a pious realm of enjoyment in the material world, but it won't get you out of the material world. You understand? So there's a difference between the pious activities. So our definition of pious activities is those activities that are in relation to devotional service that will take one back to Godhead. Like that. That is what we consider the pious, real pious activities. Does that make some sense? You know, you lost tea. Will there be slackness?
Yeah, in our part to do the follow the sadhana on our own part.
Means if we're thinking that I'll just depend on Krishna and do nothing, and he'll do everything, then yes, because then we're not doing devotional service. Devotional service means I do my service. The obstacles that come, I depend upon Krishna, that we may remember him. The whole purpose of doing devotional service is to remember Krishna and never forget. So when the obstacles come, sometimes we have a tendency to forget Krishna. Right? So our whole idea is the obstacles to overcome is not forgetting Krishna, to remember Krishna. That's the main thing. And then how that obstacle will become overcome, that is up to Krishna. And then you have very wonderful, amazing ways things happen. Like if you read, I mean, you just hear stories of anything, how devotees do something. You know, you have somebody, new devotee, been 3 months in the movement, and then they go and organize a huge Rath Yatra festival, go and speak to the governments and work out this and that. And what did they know? What have they done before? You know, they were some hippies or yogis or, you know, potheads or something, you know. And what's their qualification? So this is but it comes out in such a wonderful way. So the different obstacles, they come out on top. So if, that's what Prabhupada said, from outside, nothing, no one can destroy, because Krishna is more powerful than the material energy. Right? Maya is not trying to overcome Lord Chaitanya's mission. She's just trying to overcome, offer to us material desires that we've had since time immemorial and see if we actually want to take part in the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Right? But she's Lord Chaitanya's servant, so it always works out wonderfully. The Lord is always glorious. Right? That's how that verse starts out. Jayati Janani Vaso. That the Lord is always victorious. He is never not victorious. He's always victorious. So now it's just, do we want to take part in his victory past times or not? That's all. So if we just stick in there, it comes out very, very wonderful. Like that. So it's not that we sit back and do nothing. That's impersonal concept or voidist concept, that we'll do nothing. And that's spiritual life. So that is what is so unique about bhakti, is spiritual life means activity. All others is they give up activity. We do activity. Right? But we may change activity. Okay, instead of breaking the four regulative principles, now we follow some other set of rules. So activity is there. We just change it. The karmis are doing the same thing. They take up a rule of activities to situate themselves in a particular place in the material sphere. And they follow those very nicely. You want to be an executive, businessman. There's a certain set of rules you must follow. Right? You must dress in a particular way. You must do things in the right way. You have to have all the trappings, the proper cut in your suit, the proper car, the proper mobile phone, the proper briefcase, stay at all the right hotels, read all the right books, and you have to do all the things. They have a set of rules that go with it. If you want to be anything, there's a set of rules. You want to be an academic, they have a set of rules. They have a language. You have to give up one thing and accept another. So we've been doing that since time immemorial. But the common thing is it's always been sensual. Right? Sensual and mental and our ego. So the gross and subtle body has been some way engaged. So now we're giving up things that don't seem to be to be along that line. Because now we're actually getting into transcendental pious activities. Giving up sinful and going to transcendental activities. Activities in relationship with the Lord. So therefore, it seems that it's very different. So devotional service becomes very hard to understand. Because material world means we went from one material activity to another material activity to another material activity. Now we want to give up material activity, so that means we give up all activities. Right? So therefore the jnani and the yogi, that's what they do. Right? The karmi does material activities because he wants material result. The jnanis and yogis, they're not interested in the material result, so they give up material activities. But the devotee is interested in spiritual results, so he takes up spiritual activities. They look the same. Right? Because the spiritual world is reflected onto the material world. So the material world is going to have some semblance of the material world, the spiritual world. Right? It's going to have some connection like that. So it doesn't mean that we sit back and do nothing. It means we engage ourselves, but we depend upon Krishna. Right? And we expect only He can remove. Right? It's not by our determination we're going to remove. Our determination, we engage in Krishna's service to please Him. And then by His grace, we expect His mercy, that therefore these impediments will be removed. Because Krishna wants to remove them. But the problem is we have attachment for them, so it's very hard for Krishna to remove them. Right? We say we want to give this up, but we're only interested in giving up the part of it that creates the sinful reaction. We're suffering, and we feel bad for that, and we want to give up those things, thinking of all bad thoughts and this and that, and crazy sinful desires come in our mind. But are we playing to Krishna, I want to give up the pious desires? Right? of thinking of the nice, you know, home situation and the nice interrelationship with the wife and the children and all the community. Everything is going very perfectly and everybody's saying Hari Bol and everything's so perfect and no politics. And in this way, then we sit here and enjoy the material world very nice. Are we asking to give those up? So the two go together. They're the two sides of the coin. So we're saying we want to give up this side of the coin, but because we don't want to give up the other side, it doesn't go away. We have to give up both. We have to give up, I have all these nonsense, sinful desires, but I also have to give up the pious desires, and therefore I want to just serve you. I want to please you. Right? And therefore, we then work within the community of devotees. We deal with the community of devotees because they're devotees. So therefore, I'm the one conscious of them. I am conscious of my surroundings. I am conscious I'm in the Dham. I'm conscious that the devotees are special. I'm conscious that this is the Lord's movement. So I'm very careful to behave properly. Right? Therefore, everybody else experiences nice behavior. But in the pious thing, it's like, how come everybody doesn't deal nicely with me? How come everybody's this? Why there's politics? Why there's all that? You know? It's all coming from outside. It's nothing to do with me. I'm already perfect. How come everybody else is so imperfect? You know, I have perfect desire. I want everything to be nice. You know, how come they can't have the same desire? So the whole thing is it has to be reversed. One has to see the piety in relationship to Krishna. Otherwise, that piety is still, it's engaged in Krishna service, which is the lower level. This is, we see the devatas. They're devotees, they're pious, and there's plenty of politics going on up there. Plenty of troubles. You know, they're running off with each other's wives, they're fighting over positions, they're doing all these different things. Right? All that's going on. You know, so whatever you see going on here, it's going on up there also. Just they look a little better, they have a little nicer houses, they have nicer cars, and they got more, you know, money and ornaments. You know? That's all. So we have to give up the complete, the sinful and the pious. Then we'll find it completely goes away. Right? So then we see it in relation to what I am in the material world. You know, and maybe I have bad feelings towards people. So then, what is the actual way that pleases Krishna? How I should view people? How I should deal with people? What is the etiquette and the culture that Krishna expects from me as a devotee? And then I should therefore try to follow that to please Krishna, rather than I'm just pious to please myself. Right? Or impious to please myself. So at least the pious can be engaged in Krishna's service. So that's the beginning point of devotional service. But after time, if we want to mature in devotional service in advance, we have to come to that next position of what it pleases Krishna, then from there come back to our position. Rather than, here's my position, you know, okay, Krishna, here I am, you know. It's like, you know, that's there, so this... Just like, okay, we like to dress nicely. So I like to dress nicely, so, you know, therefore I'm dressing nicely. And I use a Krishna service. You know, I preach, I dress nicely when I preach, or go to the temple, and this or that. The other thing is that Krishna, for this preaching mission, then Prabhupada wanted us to be look like, you know, proper, like we're gentlemen, gentlewomen, like this. So therefore, for the preaching, I should dress properly. Okay? Externally, it looks exactly the same. Internally, it's very different. One is still bound by so many desires. The other is just is free. Right? Not completely liberated, but free. This is very, very subtle. So that is the point. We have to understand this process. We have to understand the three levels, the four levels, basically, of devotional service. You know, the Kanista, the Madhyam, and in the Uttam, then Bhava, and then Prema. When we understand this, then it makes life much easier, because then we know goal, right? We have to understand our relationship as servant of Krishna, we have to understand the process, how to serve Krishna, and we have to understand the goal, to please Krishna and to develop pure love for Krishna. Because if we don't, then we get sidetracked. You know, we'll get sidetracked by pious desires. Right? We get sidetracked by pious desires. Because, you know, 20, 30 years of devotional service is definitely going to purify somebody. But if one doesn't keep the goal as pure devotional service very prominent, one will come up to the pious point and kind of like slow down, because it becomes pleasant. You know, the impediment, so many of the different impediments, all that go away. And then the kind of like, it's nice. But then if one doesn't keep going, then one's attention will be distracted from Krishna onto those activities. Then because the consciousness becomes more material, then naturally then these difficulties come up again. You know? And we have to be very careful then. You know, in the beginning we blame people, but now we blame even more. And we think it's worse. Yes, we must. That's the whole process, is to always beg Krishna that we may be engaged in his service. Okay. But in desiring the higher taste, we must also be prepared to give up the lower taste. You understand? Means the two go together. We want the higher taste, we have to be willing to give up the lower taste. Okay. Therefore, so much is put on the material world, you know, as a place of misery, this and that, and all these different things. But we see Prabhupada also very much emphasizes service to Krishna and attraction to Krishna and chanting and being absorbed in Krishna's name from qualities and pastimes. The two go together. Okay? What time is it now? It was 6:30. 6:20. Any other questions on this? So we don't really have time to go into the next section. No? No. Both it comes, means Shraddha, when the faith, some faith is there, then we take up association of devotees, in that we'll hear. And then in Bhajana Kriya we take up the hearing process more seriously, in a very regulated, serious way. So in this then, hearing is the process, but we're hearing from devotees, you know. Or by the grace of devotees. Even we say, well, we're hearing from the book, but by the grace of devotees, generally we got a book. You know, even if we found it in the garbage can, somebody, you know, sold it to somebody who threw it in the garbage can. So generally the process starts with the association of devotees. And when we associate with devotees, then we develop faith in the process, and we want to engage in the process nicely. Then from that, then hearing then becomes the very important thing in the beginning. It means it's always there. Shravanam kirtanam. If there's no shravanam, there's no kirtanam. One hasn't heard, one can't chant. So that's the whole idea, is that we're always hearing, we're always chanting. So with others, we're what we've heard, we tell others. What they've heard, they tell us. Like this, the process of chanting the Lord's name, chanting the Lord's, you know, name, form, qualities, pastimes is always going on. So it begins with hearing. So hearing is very essential. So we hear in the association of devotees. We hear with the scriptures like that. Yeah. Anything else? No. Okay. So then we'll... Yes. Uh-huh. Is it important to see the difference between pious reaction and Krishna's mercy? It means it's the devotee sees everything as Krishna's mercy, because whatever the reaction, it's coming by Krishna's grace anyway. It means we've had a desire, that desire is sanctioned by the Lord, then the modes of nature carry it out. So whether we're getting the pious or the impious side of it, then that's all coming by the Lord's grace. So we see everything as coming by the Lord's grace. So the trick is that how we use it in Krishna's service, how we remember him. So if things are very nice, we're supposed to remember this is by the Lord's grace. It all belongs to him. Like Sudama Brahman, he's very poor. He's remembering Krishna. And he's very satisfied because he has whatever Krishna has given him. Then when he has more opulence than Indra has, he's still thinking it all belongs to Krishna, it's not mine. But because here, and he's put in his care to engage, it's Krishna's energy to be engaged in Krishna's service. Therefore, then he, you know, does things, you know, that are, he uses that opulence. But in the end of the case, the devotee is equipoised, because it's all by the Lord's mercy. Like that. It means if we're getting some difficulty, we have done something in the past, and so we're getting the reaction for it. And by this, then we can understand that, you know, we have to correct ourselves. Like that, we have to. Yeah. In here, these pious activities mean devotional pious activities. So it will look like ordinary pious activities, but these are pious activities that are engaged in Krishna's service. Like that. So when it says pious, it doesn't mean, you know, they did so many ashwamedha yagyas or that. It means they did so many activities in devotional service. Therefore, like that. So it's seen. Everybody is always impressed. The devotee is always observant. Like that. The difficulty comes when we want to be observed. Right? Like you'll find is we may move. We can either be conscious of our surroundings or we can, you know, in the way of how I'm supposed to relate to that, or we've been conscious of the surroundings to see how everything is relating to us. You know? Or how we relate so that everybody relates to us. You know, I mean, you have many, so the whole idea is we become conscious of what's around us. Conscious of ourself, conscious of everything. So if we actually become self-conscious, you know, or Krishna conscious, you know, self-conscious, we'll actually be conscious of everything, because we understand we're the soul, we're serving the Krishna. Then we'll be conscious of everything, because we're serving the Krishna, all this belongs to Krishna. So as a servant, it's my business to see that all this is engaged nicely in Krishna's service. Then one actually sees. Like Prabhupada was so much like that. In Vrindavan, they came in and they set up this nice, in the, when you come in the temple, there's two little rooms in the front. You have the book tables and the prasad distribution. Then there's two in the corners of the temple, two little dinky rooms. They used to use for life membership, and the other one they didn't know what to do, so they made a display of Prabhupada's books. And so then everybody was very happy, you know, made a nice arrangement, and Prabhupada came in and stood there. And he just said, Does no one see? He was very upset, and everybody's looking at the books and looking at the table and looking at the cloth that the books are on, and everybody's thinking, well, everything looks nice, I can't see, you know, is one of the books out of order, or, you know, the color of the cloth is wrong, or, you know, like this and that. Finally, after a long time, the Prabhupada took his cane and pointed up at the chandelier, which had a big bird's nest in it, you know, because they're not aware of themselves, then they'd be aware of everything. And then in this room, you know, then everything is there. So, because I'm only doing this, then it's, you know, but then it's like, it just, it broadens the consciousness. So just one becomes aware of more. So Prabhupada is aware of everything. Mm-hmm. Like that, because he was fully aware of himself, because he understood he is a servant of Krishna. So he was fully self. He was the real self-conscious.
Quoting the Brahma Samhita, that had all these seeds of Amra burning to ashes for the early. So he's pointing out that it's not a karmic reaction. There is no karmic reaction for the early, because Krishna says he burns them to ashes.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But we often hear about, you know, slowing down with the fan and things like that. And even Prabhupada's offering quite similar such a factor as he has food offering. He says that you suffer the lot for which I am destined.
Yeah.
So it appears there's two things that this Krishna's. One says it's Krishna's arrangement. Actually, it's not actually karmic. And another one says it's karmic. According to Prabhupada's often quite satanic, it appears that Yogi has the attitude that it is my karma.
Yeah.
And according to that purpose, it's actually
directed
by Krishna, it's not actually a
connection. Yeah. That's a very... He's saying that the point in the purport to this verse, the 10th canto verse about suffering the resultant actions of the deed, and then Prabhupada quotes from Brahma Samhita, where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is mentioning that let me suffer the lot of what I'm due for my activities, whatever I've done.
No, no.
Huh? The reaction?
It was Prabhupada's offering.
His offering. Okay. I missed
it.
About the beach. Yeah, okay. So then, see, because when one chants Hare Krishna, even in the Namabhas stage, all reactions are destroyed. I mean, it just mentions, where is it here? Just by seeing the Archi, it says here, in the Skanda Purana, there's the following description of the result of seeing Archi worship the deity. If someone sees the face of the Lord while Artik is going on, he can be relieved of all sinful reactions from coming from many, many thousands and millions of years past. He is even excused from the killing of a Brahmin or similar prohibited activities. So it means these are destroyed. And so then that's from the Pancharatrik side. And so from the holy name, it's even more. It's just like one chanting, even in Namavas, one is liberated. One is freed from all these things. So there actually is of the how you say? Of the seed, of the what's it called? Phulan Mukha, the almost manifest sinful activity, and the prarabdha, or the actual fruit of the activity, that's all destroyed. But it's in from what I understand, I don't remember where it's mentioned, is that the Krishna reduces, means that's destroyed, but Krishna leaves just a little bit of the prarabdha. It means something has to be left, because this body is a reaction of the prarabdha, of the activities before. So if Krishna removed all of it, then this body would disappear also. So he leaves that, and then something, just whatever is necessary. Because what doesn't go away with the chanting, means that automatically is just removed, is the desire for material activity. When we perform, let's say we perform a material activity, four things are created from that, but in two lines. One, it creates a seed, means I do an activity. It creates the seed that will give the pious or impious result. That grows into a plant, which will give the fruit or the reaction. Another line it does is it creates the desire to do that again. Right? Just like I do something, I have a very good meal, immediately I want to have another good meal. Right? The same thing, it comes up, the desire comes. Right? And then from eating the good meal I just had now, then, you know, I may get my stomach ache or whatever else I get from it. You know, that the results come there. You know, and depending upon my behavior, I may be invited back or not. You know, so I'll get the reaction there. But the desire is there for it. That comes up. So that doesn't go. So that's why there's so much importance on this whole aspect of the sakam and nishkam, of changing the desire from sinful into proper devotional activities, but based on what I want to do or what Krishna wants to do. So that desire goes through these three phases of doing it because I want to do it, doing what I want to do for Krishna, and doing what Krishna wants to do, what Krishna wants me to do. Like that. So that then has to be purified. That's why we get these two, generally these two kind of like, maybe we were discussing with Parideya this morning, you get some devotees will then talk on just do the service, get out there and everything, and that's it, don't worry about anything else. And then others is, no, you have to cultivate, you have to get into all these things, and they're not so much into doing dynamic service. You know, because Parideya was saying, Prabhupada makes the point of results, you know, means we're result-oriented. So it was, you know, temples opening, devotees made, books distributed, and so many different things. But at the same time, as we see that Prabhupada started stressing, especially around 75, that the quality, the training of the devotees and all that must come up. So he didn't say, now it's time to stop the other things. He was saying, now it's time to increase this. Boil the milk. So he didn't say, okay, now we're going to stop making devotees. We're going to shut down everything until we've worked it all out. You know, no. That the Gaudiya Mat's been saying for the last 50, 60 years. That was why Prabhupada was successful and they were not so active. Their whole point is when I become perfect, then I'll talk about going out and preaching. So Prabhupada's point was we go out and preach, we engage our nature. And depending upon our nature, you know, especially Westerners, there's much more passion, ignorance. So therefore, they can, you know, butt heads in a more dynamic way with the material energy. So then, if they don't do big things, you know, I mean, if an American isn't doing something big, he's not an American. Something's wrong. He's become a European, or he's become a, you know, a Mexican, or he's become something else. He's not an American anymore. Unless he's going for the moon, he's not an American. So therefore, Prabhupada set the standard like that. But it didn't mean that after time, as they became purified, that they could now start to actually sit down and read. Because before, you sit down and read, you just fall asleep. You know, devotees hadn't heard much of the philosophy. Sit down, after 2 minutes, everything you know, you've already said. So by that time, training has been going, so many things are there. Now devotees could seriously get down to studying Bhagavad Gita, studying all these things. He wanted it from the beginning, but devotees weren't, he wanted, you know, he came out 64 rounds, just, okay, then 16 rounds and get out there and be very dynamic. But his idea was, is by 1975, he'd have devotees who have already studied up to the level of Bhaktivedanta and would already be taking disciples. But, you know, it didn't happen. So at least by 75, he was saying, now we should get serious about this aspect of cultivation. You know, boiling the milk, improving the quality. Quantity was going very nicely by that time. You know, the book distribution, the temples opening, everything was becoming very, very big and very, very wonderful. So now, the quality of it had to come up. So both have to go together. So sometimes that makes a dichotomy, because one talks quality and doesn't talk about doing dynamic service. One talks dynamic service, but not about the quality. But the process is, one has to do both. Though in the beginning, you know, newer devotees, it's much more on just getting them engaged, you know, wash the pots without, you know, spending 5 hours each pot because they space out and go out and stuff like that. And I remember when I joined, you know, the first few months. When we do circumambulation of the temple, because in those days you had to go around the block. You know, you couldn't go around the temple. You went around the whole block. And I remember the devotee behind me had to very regularly push me. Because I'd be so much thinking of this and that that I'd just stop moving. You know, and they'd have to push, you know, and then, oh, yeah, you know, and then, you know, we're still here, you know, we're in the body, you know. You just leave the body and go off into the, you know, mental plane. So you have to push. Otherwise, nothing's going to happen. You know, unless you say, okay, I want all these pots washed in half an hour. You can come back after 3 days and you'll still be there, you know, one little spot of the pot, you know, you're polishing and making super shiny and stuff like that, you know. So you have to push. Otherwise, the mode of ignorance will prevail. You know, like you always say, Prabhupada said, something done quickly and properly is the mode of goodness. Something done quickly and badly is the mode of passion. And something done slowly and badly is the mode of ignorance. And every time I've quoted it, immediately the question comes, what about if it's done nicely and slowly? Right? That's just a combination of goodness and ignorance. You know, you do it nice, but it's done so slow. You know, like that. So it's that pushing has to be there. Otherwise, until the ignorance goes down a bit, and the passion kind of like becomes properly directed, it becomes very difficult to improve the quality. The quality meaning the consciousness. Like that, and that dedication and the fine points of the devotional process of remembering, hearing, all these different things. But at some point that has to come. So that's what we're discussing. You know, that's mainly, I must say that in the discussions, I'm aiming at that, basically at that. Devotees who have been around for some years have done some service, and then are, you know, it's, they could take advantage of understanding that these aspects are there. It means this particular points that are made, if you were, you wouldn't necessarily discuss this in the new bhakti program. You know, some may catch it, some may not. But if it's not done, then every chance it will get sidelined by the niceness of devotional service, the piety. Right? Like that. And then, you know, even we had, it's never enough. You know, it's like facilities, like I mentioned before, the facilities that we had in the 70s here in Mayapur, I don't think there's anyone here in Mayapur who would live just with those facilities practically. You know, almost. You know? I mean, is it? You know? During the flood, you get a little close to it. But not so much. I see markets here and all kinds of things happening and stuff like that. But it's rare. I mean, you live fairly simple of what it used to be there. But others, hardly. So it's come up so much, but still it's like considered not really up to standard. You know, it's still it's like that. So it's so much more. So just one gets accustomed, one gets, what do you call it? Conditioned. And then whatever it is, it's not. I don't know, did that answer the question? Or the basic point is the seeds are destroyed, the Phulan Mukha is destroyed, the Prarabdha, a little bit is left according to what Krishna wants to leave to encourage us in devotional service. Because otherwise, if everything is removed, we'll have a tendency to forget Krishna. So something is left, just to remind us we're in the material world. So it's very mild, like Prabhupada would say, is that we should have had our arm cut off or been killed, you know, but we just get a little cut on our finger. So Krishna reduces it just down to small. So we can imagine if it's something very big, that either it's a reaction to an offense, or if it's not, we're doing everything nicely, we can just understand how big was actually the reaction we should have gotten. You know? Like that, Krishna's reduced it down to, that's just a little token, probably use the word token. It's just a little something for what was there, to remind us of our material, you know, the our attachments to the material world. So something is there. But that's, as you were mentioning, that's under the direction of Krishna. Once one takes up devotional service, then Krishna is controlling. No, it's still carried out by the modes of nature, but Krishna is guiding. Like that. So, okay. So we're happy with that. Okay, so we'll end here. Srila Rupa Goswami Pada Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.